extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time Club and Country, driven by Continental from our HTC5G virtual studio in the world, New York City. David Goss, Matt Doyle, Kaylin Carr with you, post-USMNT, post-Canadian MNT World Cup qualifying, a game we have been waiting 30 years for, and this has been worth the wait. It was exciting. It was fun. Canada. A tie was a loss 3 days ago. A tie is now a win. Get pumped up for the boys in red, although black today. It was exciting. It was fun. You guys, I just, from an overall point of view, 40,000 fans, two teams going at it toe-to-toe, so much talent. That was the first, this is my first reaction to this game, and I don't know how you guys feel, that like, this felt real. This felt like World Cup qualifying is here.
Kaylin?
No, I mean, absolutely. When you look at the two teams, I mean, there's so much anticipation between these two teams coming through with so much exciting talent coming face to face and this kind of new era of Canada football. And in a way, it feels like you might be seeing this rivalry now back and forth for the next, I don't know, six, 8 years like this. And that's partly, I don't know if I would describe this from a US fan's perspective as fun. it was pretty much anything but. I thought the first half went more in the US direction, although, you know, outside of maybe Christian's chance off the post, didn't have too many clear-cut opportunities, but had much of the possession dominated with the ball, and Canada seemed much more content to sit back. And then the second half, actually, it was really Canada was the far better team and seemed to grow stronger into the match. I thought looked much more dangerous even as the game went on. If it wasn't for Alphonso Davies going out, I think Canada would have been far more likely of the teams to come away with 3 points. But in the end, I think a 1-1 draw was a fair result. I think it was a fair result. I think Canada fought hard, came down, had quality. I think the depth was a difference in some direction. I'm sure we'll talk about the substitutions or lack thereof on the US side, as well as some of the moves that Canada made to really sort of push for the game after they leveled. They didn't sit back and just say, we're going to sit there until the very end. I think when Davies came off, they made a couple more practical substitutions. But difficult, disappointing for the U.S. team from that perspective. And credit to Canada, because they did exactly what you do on the road, which is to make it difficult, be compact, don't give up too many chances, and then use your difference makers and special players on the break. And they seem to have more of them than the U.S. did when it came down to it.
Canada has waited 30 years for this moment, right? To be in this round was 30 years, and then
25 years.
And then, as Kaylin said, to have the players who can step up to this moment, both on the bench and in the starting lineup. Alphonso Davies, the best player probably in the region, and he made the biggest play today. And I think you could see that level of leadership as well. Of there was a willingness for him to say, just play through me, and Canada could kind of ride him along.
Yeah, he never got rattled. And so Canada never got rattled. If your best player is out there playing like that. But it really wasn't just him. Like, they deserve a lot of credit for their game plan. I thought, you know, John Herdman did the obvious thing. He played a 5-4-1, put 10 guys, you know, put the entire team behind the ball and said to the U.S., okay, we dare you to come up and try to break us down and take the risks that you have to take in order to break down a really well-disciplined bunker. Knowing that in Davies and Kyle Larin, and to a lesser extent, Richie Larea and Junior Hoylett, they have absolutely terrifying weapons on the break. And the U.S. were not able to really navigate that, the risk-reward aspect of it, too well in terms of going forward. And I think if you're a U.S. fan and you're enough of a masochist to want to rewatch this one, you'll see a lot of tentativeness from the U.S., not only in terms of what they're doing on the ball, but in the runs they're making off the ball. There was a it wasn't really a lack of determination. It was a lack of directness and intent. And part of that comes from the fact that, you know, if you get too far out of position against Alphonso Davies and the rest of that attack, they're coming back at you a million miles an hour. And it happened a few times. It happened more often in the second half, obviously. So it's tough and it's frustrating. And ultimately, 1-1 ends up being the correct result, I think.
Kalen, we talked obviously about Canada tying at home to Honduras, and everyone has said it for the last, 2 years now. The formula in CONCACAF is win at home and hope you can get some draws here and there on the road. Does this tie for Canada in a spot where, while I understand it's not a given, you expect the U.S. and Mexico to be two of the bigger teams and better teams in this region, and obviously off the summer it's true. Does this steal back a point from what you lost against Honduras? Does this mean that if Canada goes home and beats El Salvador, that it's a good opening window for them on 5 points?
Absolutely. I think, you have to learn in World Cup qualifying that each result is so massive that if Canada loses at home in the last match to El Salvador or draws, it will probably be colored and say it wasn't a great window for them. But I think, they have set themselves up and put themselves in a good position. And I think when you just really more look at tonight, we had looked at it and said, I remember after the last match saying, okay, well, Canada had maybe a difficult result in their first match. Would they potentially hedge their bets a little bit to put everything into the last match? And that was clearly not the case. And I think for a Canada side that has in a lot of ways, just even that question that we posed it to say, well, would they maybe concede versus the U.S.? That was not a team that came out to concede. I mean, they did concede the ball in possession at times in the first half, but I think that's just more pragmatism than anything. And really just a good game plan, because what they have is a unique, world talent in Alphonso Davies. And at every point in the match, there was the one where there was the direct ball. I believe it came straight from the goalkeeper, actually, or maybe the center back, and it goes just straight over Sergiño Dest.
Through Sergiño Dest.
Either around, through Davies, it's kind of a blur. You almost don't know. I mean, he's just that incredible. And yeah, I also think Dest, that was going to be the big question when we saw the lineup of could he handle that matchup? And I think in moments, he was going forward. He showed you some of his quality, created some dangerous opportunities.
I actually think he was really good in the first 40 minutes, other than that one, catastrophe.
He was actually really good.
You thought he was really good defensively or overall? Yeah.
But as a right back, that's a crazy bet, right?
Absolutely.
The problem with Sergiño Dest is that overall, it was amazing. You beat two guys and played it to Aronson, and we almost get the own goal off that, or the U.S. almost get an own goal off that. But I was rooting for the U.S. But now the other direction is that
you just mispronounced U.S. You meant to say exactly. That, and you said us.
The other direction is just a moment where he switches off, and against a player the quality of Alphonso Davies, you can't do that. And at every point, just to speak more to Davies and his quality, I mean, Tyler Adams, who I thought had a near heroic match as far as covering ground, making tackles, covering, winning balls, the whole thing that you would expect from, the U.S. captain, was there. But whether it was him, Miles Robinson, whether it was DeAndre Yedlin, each of them had to make, every time they stole the ball or were able to win the ball off of Davies, it was a near heroic play. And all three of those guys are elite athletes that have to have the top high end speed. And that's how good Davies was. And there were times where he still gave them fits. And all you need is one or two plays a game and he's going to make you pay. The first one, Laren wasn't able to get it in. Matt Turner gets a hand on it. And the second one, he makes us pay. So it was just, feel that if he was able to stay, on the pitch, which was lucky for the U.S. that he was not, I think there was Canada between him and Tejan on the other side as a substitution. He had, a very dangerous play where he was able to get across, get inside of John Brooks and then play to the back post. Canada looked the much more likely team to me to come away with 3 points.
There was a lot of energy to this game. You talked about, Kalen, this rivalry for the next, you said 6 years. I think when you look at Tyler and Alphonso Davies and their age, we should be saying 12 years potentially, and hopefully if they can stay healthy and continue on this trajectory. But Darrell, there are a few moments when I was watching this game and it was the, like, where are we now? And one was Richie, who was a college draft pick at the 10, who couldn't get on the field for Orlando and was at times unplayable when in possession and just looked so fluid and dangerous throughout this whole game. And then Brendan Aaronson, who, you know, this is a kid from New Jersey who wasn't really a full-time starter 2 years ago, and now he scores in a World Cup qualifying. But for this Canadian team, Richie, along with a lot of these other players, stepped up. I think it was 6 changes from the last game, and you really didn't see a drop-off, if not even better performances, especially along the back three, although Scott Kennedy had a few dangerous moments in there.
Yeah, I mean, they've MLS has been very good to Canada. They have developed a lot of talent, and not just backups, but like high-end game-changing talent like Tejan Buchanan and Richie Larea, Kyle Larin, you know, his first professional contract was with Orlando City. And Alistair Johnson, yeah, came out of, I don't want to say nowhere, but he was not exactly high on the radar for Canada.
And I mean, League Mark One Anthony Ontario.
Kay. Yeah, League One Ontario, right. We've all said that it's coming with Canada. It feels in a lot of ways like it's here. But at the same time, they've already dropped home points. You know, and so far, 7 teams have played home games in the hexagonal. 6 of them have dropped points at home. That's what World Cup qualifying is. And it's kind of throw them into the deep end for both this Canadian team and this U.S. team. And I think after tonight, you're obviously much happier if you're a Canadian. I mean, if you go on Twitter right now, the U.S. national team fan base is at DEFCON 12. They're losing their minds. And that's never, like, that is never a fun Twitter to be around, and it's just absolutely miserable at the moment.
Can I do a fun thing?
Go ahead.
Can I take you into that Twitter? So we're obviously here live. If you're listening later on, by the way, thanks for listening. This is our post-game show. There will be an MLS segment connected to the end of this that we have already recorded. So if you're listening to the podcast, you will hear that. If you are watching live, download the show tomorrow. And then wherever you get your podcasts, I don't know, Apple, Spotify, whatever. I don't actually know where we are. You can listen to it there. Thane Griffin, though, on Twitter, Doyle says, when was the last time we, and by that he means the USA, looked confident in attack for a full game?
Oh, I don't know. It's been a bit. But like this is one of the things that U.S. national team Twitter really struggles with, and that's the notion that there are 2 teams on the field. It's hard to look really dangerous in attack against a bunker. Like, in this Canada team bunkered. The U.S. had 72% possession. And to break that down, you have to take a ton of risks. And in order to take those, I mean, if you take those risks, then again, you're giving up counterattacking chances to Alphonso Davies. And that's tough to negotiate, especially with a young team. But there was a fundamental issue with the U.S. today. And it was the placement of Kellen Acosta and Sebastian Legette as the number 8s, trying to either create overloads or work between the lines. And remember, on the pregame spaces, I said, I worry about Acosta as an 8 because if you put him in a position where he doesn't have to get on the ball and do stuff, he won't find the ball. He doesn't find those spaces. He doesn't put pressure on the opponents with his movement if the game's not going through him. And that's what we saw tonight. So it was constantly Tyler Adams dropping deep to get on the ball because it was either him or John Brooks doing the distribution. And then Legette flaring out to the right side, almost outside of Canada's midfield shape to create overloads. And then Acosta sort of drifting aimlessly and sometimes not even looking for the ball, floating through midfield. And you would have runners checking, like Pulisic or sometimes Aaronson, sometimes Jordy Pefuck were checking back, but it wasn't in concert with anything that Acosta was doing or Legette to sort of scramble up the Canadian midfield and make it harder to to maintain that bunker. Like, you have to put pressure on a bunker from within. You can't just constantly go down the sidelines and whip in crosses. I mean, Canada was so good defensively out wide that the U.S. weren't even getting down the sidelines to whip in a cross anyway. So the U.S., because of the way it played out in that central midfield, they were never going to look competent in attack. And this has been, I think, the biggest issue during the Berhalter era, is that those rotations through central midfield aren't crisp enough and aren't dangerous enough and don't stress the opposing team's tactical shape enough to create the type of flowing, we're in the zone, we're really moving the ball around at a good tempo type of attack that can, you know, win you games 3-0, that can make you look like the far superior team. We're just not at that point yet. Now, maybe if Weston McKennie hadn't gotten himself suspended, he would have been better at that. But, Weston McKennie did what he did and broke protocol, and Berhalter had to suspend him for the game. He's better at doing that exact type of thing than Kellen Acosta is. There are mitigating circumstances here, but mitigating circumstances or not, home draw is not a great result.
Kaelin, when you look at this attack for the U.S., it was Stu talked about patience a lot in the beginning, and I think a lot of people felt patience became, to Doyle's point, slow.
Ponderousness.
Ponderousness.
Yeah. Whatever. Right there for you, David. Come on.
Whatever word you want to use, what do you see when you see these young players out there? Because we watch all of them with their clubs, and a lot of them have been dangerous. A lot of them play in more pressing systems or play in transition a little bit more. And then you see them out there tonight and it just doesn't look like a cohesive group.
I actually am going to take the other side. I do think the patience was a good thing in the first half. And I thought at times the U.S. was very good with the ball. I thought they moved it well. I thought they were able to get the ball into positions out wide that at least asked some questions. And then I think when the U.S. was most successful actually was around times where they were able to counter press. And we know Canada, they're a good side. They have super dangerous weapons ahead, but I can't say that they're especially adept with the ball in the back. And if you put them under pressure, as we saw Aaronson do, that created ultimately his goal. That was an example of the time where I felt like the U.S. was able to really put Canada under pressure without the ball and use that energy, use that kind of enthusiasm to create a problem. And then that's where you create the goal. I thought the U.S. actually kind of went away from that and lost a little bit of that patience in the second half with the ball, where they were able to circulate it, move it side to side, and at times tried to play a little bit more direct or play a little bit more into that Canada set, the way Canada wanted to play, which was going to be a little bit more end to end and open. And I think that that's where the U.S. found themselves in a little bit more trouble than not. And the other thing too is I just felt like Canada grew with the game, and I felt that at a certain point I felt like Brendan Aaronson, who had played, you got to remember, the full from the start in El Salvador, and I didn't know how much he would have left for this game. I think he should definitely be celebrated as one of the top players for the U.S. I mean, outside of the goal, I thought he was really, his energy was important throughout the entire match, and showed sort of the range of his abilities throughout just his goal, which was to win the ball, continue it. We actually break lines through the middle of the field. Then we get that overlap where the left back's able to finally get forward. Robinson squares it across. And then he shows the final bit of his fitness to be able to get on the end of it. But I think that I still think that that's where the U.S. is at its strength. And yeah, we want to talk about these progressions or patterns of play to get all the way up. But once it's really hard to break down a deep lying low block the way that Canada was sitting. So the best way to do it is to counter press. And I thought that's where the U.S. really did it. And then have patience when you realize they're set. And then that low blocks, I thought we lost a little bit of that as the game went on.
So Kaelin, I agree with you, but in my mind, the direct play leads to more opportunities to counter press or win second balls. And that's what was frustrating to me, was the patience after patience after patience was.
So you want some energy drink soccer.
Brendan Aaronson, Tyler Adams, Christian, all of them play that way. All of them do that. And so that's where I think it felt like the U.S. is in a bit of a holding pattern between how all the talent fits and how Greg Berhalter sees the game. And maybe Greg is right in that the highest end ability of a U.S. men's national team is to perfect what he's working on. But is it going to get them wins in 2021?
Also, to be able to play that style of play that we're calling for, that I think the U.S. is actually works well for them, you have to have depth. And the margins between the two teams tonight were going to be small to begin with. And that's just, you can sort of copy and paste that into any CONCACAF match, as we found out last week and as we're going to find out this week coming ahead. And yes, the questions are going to be brought up. It is Weston McKennie. It's incredibly disappointing. At the time this is coming out, we don't have any details about what happened other than U.S. Soccer put out that he broke protocol. But that's, you can't have that. You cannot have that in a match where the margins are this tight. And then because you have bad luck as well, where it's, okay, Zach Steffen, he's out. Yes, but we feel good that we have Matt Turner. And there was going to be that debate over who was the number one to begin with. You feel good about Horvath even. That's fine. But the further and further down you go where you say, okay, well, Gio Reyna does the hamstring. That's unlucky, right? If that happens in World Cup qualifying, now we go a step down. So now Aronson has to start. How do you feel good about using your substitutions? De La Fuente, he looked good in the first one, but Greg, for whatever reason, didn't maybe have the same trust with him. And then you say, Christian, he's been off on a long layoff, unlucky due to COVID. These are things that are outside of your control. So I just can't help but feel disappointed when, and that question is going to continue to be asked. And I think after everything that's happened and the results, to say that Weston, like, you're supposed to be the leader of this team or one of the leaders of this team. How does this happen of a game of this magnitude? And yeah, maybe you get 3 points, the team bails you out, you move on. But there are mistakes that you can make. And I don't know, like I said, I don't understand what happened. I don't know what happened, but the margins just got smaller and smaller. And when you talk about the style of play you want to play, the press, the personality, and the personnel that you have available to make substitutions, I felt like it really threw everything off.
So you're talking subs. We're going to get there because I think that's most of what people want to know about, as well as right backs. But I want to give you this quote from John Herdman, which is, proud of the performance, but some games are there for the taking, and we had a chance to get three. Said that this game would keep him up for a couple nights. Sam Adekube gave a similar quote, who said, we felt like this was an opportunity missed, that 3 points was there. Doyle, I said to you on the Twitter spaces before the game that I felt like if it was tied in the 60-65th, that Herdman would go for three, just seeing how the points lay out. Yeah. And he did. He brought on Tejan, he brought on David, and they were the closer team to winning over the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, other than the Miles Robinson header right at the end, right there.
Richie gets the end line, Tejan got to the end line twice.
So, yeah, you're right, but also, Sargent was in a very good spot and gets fouled. PFOG has a header that he could have just laid into Aronson's path, and he just completely, gets the wrong way on the header. So, I get what they're saying, and I get why people feel that way. To me, I think the draw was probably the correct outcome, or cosmically correct result in this one. But I do like what it indicates from Canadian soccer, just the level of confidence and the fact that they're not here just to be here. They're here to ruin people's days. And in a weird way, and I don't think I would feel like this if I was Canadian, but from the outside looking in, going down 1-0 to Honduras at home and then playing as well as they did in the second half and only coming away with a draw, it obviously hurts to drop home points, but it's not like anybody's going to be running away, other than maybe Mexico. Nobody's going to be running away at the top of the hex. It's almost a good thing for Canada because they got punched in the mouth and they responded really, really well. And then they went on the road and they went down again, got punched in the mouth, and they responded really, really well. And so I think they're going to be able to play with a little bit more anger and a little bit more intent from the whistle. And at this point, it's just a question of can Herdman do the right thing in terms of rotating the squad and picking the correct shape, and making sure that whoever the weak link is in defense has adequate protection around them. And I don't think he did a good job of that in the first half of game one. But since then, he actually really, really has. And I like where Canada are right now. I know it's just 2 points from two games, but they're in a good spot.
Yeah, culturally, for him to walk away from this and sort of say to the team, this isn't a celebration moment. We expect more. We can strive for more. I think is big for what Canada's doing.
Yeah,
as
you saw at the whistle. They didn't
get a new pour.
Well, yeah, you saw at the whistle. They didn't celebrate like they had come in and suffered and found a way to somehow get a result. It was just, all right, shake hands, do right. the business, and kind of move on. And I feel like they will have felt they left something on the board, but they'll take something. They'll definitely take some confidence from this as
and
well.
A point.
Yeah,
they'll take a point. Yeah. Yeah, and a road point where when you come into CONCACAF World Cup qualifying, most teams are not saying away at USA, away at Mexico, we're going to get points there. So that's something they didn't expect. When you talk about bouncing back, talk about figuring it out. One of the promising things in my mind over the last 3 months was Greg Berhalter's ability to use substitutions to change the game in Nations League, Jordy Pefock off the bench in the semifinal, Tyler Adams when he brought him in the Nations League final, pretty much every move he made in the Nations League final. And then in the Gold Cup, he brought Giassi Zardes off the bench at the right times. He was able to sub out Matthew Hoppe. Whatever it was, he was very successful using his subs, including, I think, in El Salvador. Kaylin, you mentioned it. Brendan Aaronson played the full 90. He goes about, I think it was 83 minutes in this one. Christian Pulisic, who has not played since he tested positive for COVID, played the full 90 minutes. What did you make of Greg Berhalter's decisions with his substitutions and the way he let this game play out?
I think he was backed into a corner. I think when you look at it, I don't think Brendan Aaronson would have started this match if Gio Reyna hadn't been knocked out. I think Gio Reyna would have started. I think Pefock would have started. I think Christian would have started on the left, and then Brendan Aaronson would have been saved as a substitute to come in for Christian at the 60th minute. But then as a result, Gio gets knocked out. That changes the plans. Brendan, you've got all the energy in the world. You're young. You've got, how are you feeling? You put him out there, and he rewarded the faith of the manager with a fantastic performance. But what happens is that kicks the can down the road a little bit to where you then have to look down the bench and you say, okay, yeah, Conrad De La Fuente, yeah, I had a couple of nice moments here, but am I going to take out Christian in a game where now Canada's equalized? Or as the one game went on, it's saying, we need all 3 points at home. You look at Christian, he seems to be okay, although he was clearly not fully fit. He said in the post game, I'm fine. You can tell, you know, when you go through COVID, I haven't had it, but I would imagine it's a very serious illness, right? So that's going to affect how you come out and play a meaningful match as far as match fitness, sharpness, all that. And I thought he gave everything he had. It just wasn't quite good enough. So I think, you know, when you look one at the next, Weston McKennie, okay, yeah, he's probably going to, I was thinking my preferred lineup was going to be Acosta, Adams, and McKennie. And then maybe you have Legette at some point, right, or maybe you bring one of them off the bench. That just changes the picture as well. So just man for man, you start to look, then Sergiño Dest goes down. Then you have to make the Yedlin sub. Yedlin sub. And now we're looking at a tough position where Yedlin has put in a lot of miles against Alphonso Davies. He had to come off the first match and frankly probably needs to play in this next match against Honduras, needs to find a way to get fit because Dest probably wasn't reliable for that match anyways and comes off early in this one, so you don't know what his status is.
How much of the Canada goal do you put on Yedlin?
I think it was a tough one because he takes a little bit of like a half stance where he's level with Davies, and if you're level with Davies, you're dead.
You're behind Davies.
Yeah, yeah. You're way too far behind.
Unless you have that prime Kaelin Carr speed, you are just not catching up.
DeAndre Yedlin, does he think he's cut the angle and that's why he's out there?
He's just, there's no pressure on the ball, and you're in that half zone where you're sort of level and playing the line a bit, but it was just a split second of reaction. I can't really hold him too much at fault for that. I just feel he did a good, I felt like Yedlin came in a tough spot and did a good job. And I honestly thought that Miles Robinson, Adams, and Yedlin as a threesome did as good a job against Alphonso Davies as he possibly could and made it difficult for him. He had to come off early as well too, because he put so much into the match, but he just has so much quality. I think he's that special of a player that he was going to find a moment or two in the match. And you would just have to hope that you were either going to that Turner was going to save one, or that Laren was going to miss one as he did in the first half. And then, or that you were going to come down the other side and make him punish. And I think that was the idea of playing Dest, was to say, maybe we can pin him back a little bit and Dest will give us enough going forward that you can take some of the risk and Robinson can cover or Adams can cover. And for a large stretch of the game, I felt like a lot of that did work. It's just, there wasn't enough going forward at the end. I felt the depth. And as the game went on, Alphonso Davies just became too much and ended up.
I mean, Weston McKennie and Gio Reyna were hugely missed. I think Jossie Zardes has been missed through two games.
What about Tim Weah?
Or Tim Weah. I mean, honestly, more than Yunus Musah, absolutely. I love Tim Weah, but like this game was calling out for Jordan Morris. Just to stretch that back line and be dangerous in terms of not just going through the back line, but he takes really kind of odd starting points for his runs. There wasn't a lot of that, and it would have helped in the second half. I forgot where I was going. Anyway,
so I can just say, to echo your comments, Kalen, this was Berhalter's quote on subs. He says, "I can understand how it looks like we should have acted quicker 100%, but he says, in part, it was who he had on the bench that kind of dictated his substitutions. Jonathan Tannenwald also tweeting out here. Shout out to the goalkeeper. I know he doesn't want me to say that, though. That Jorginho Dest has an ankle sprain, so status for Wednesday's TBD. We know Gio Reyna is out for that game. He is going home. It's a right hamstring injury for him. So, again, that thin squad that Greg Berhalter is working with, he now has to figure out how can he get 90 high level minutes in Honduras out of this group, out of another travel, which is huge. There's a million things we could talk about. Can I just throw some players at you that I was interested by the performance? So you mentioned Miles Robinson. I mean, he can fly. He covers for Brooks when Brooks is covering for Robinson. I also thought Anthony Robinson was really good today, and not just the assist. The work he put in to recover on some of these counters, this is the best game I've ever seen him play for the U.S.
I agree with that. And he was good last game, too, when he came in. And I've never been a big Anthony Robinson guy, but he was really, really good on both sides of the ball. He's still limited because he can't turn play inwards and actually come inside and do the thing where the modern fullback comes inside and the winger goes outside and you're kind of positionally swapping. He is now a classic modern fullback who just bombs up the flank and has a great left foot and really times his runs very well. But he did that, and he battled defensively. And I feel I feel like he and Miles Robinson and Tyler Adams are the three guys who have played at a level above or equal to or above what I expected from the entire group. And I'm not sure there's anybody else after two games I could say that about.
And two of those guys are at positions that were question marks coming into this.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And if Robinson can lock down that left back spot legitimately, not just as a, well, you're good when we have possession as an attacking player, right? If he can be a guy that you could start away home against teams that have the ball or teams that don't have the ball, that's a huge step for this U.S. men's national team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, if you look at his pedigree, he's played a ton of championship game, for Fulham. He's played a ton of the championship, and he's played a season in the EPL. AC Milan legitimately wanted him. I'm still kind of shocked by that, but AC Milan really wanted him, but they couldn't get that across the finish line. He has the pedigree of a guy who can go out and do this. And through two games, he has been a guy who can go out and do this.
Kalen, Patrice, our friend of the show, former Canadian captain, he just tweeted at Matt Doyle. He said, Alphonso Davies beat Pulisic in X-Factor plays today. Pulisic, we knew it was going to be tough for him. You saw flashes. You see from him that he wants to be the leader. He pumps up the crowd. He takes the free kicks. He comes inside when he's not getting touches on the ball. It just didn't seem to to totally flow for him in this one.
Yeah, and I think Christian gave everything he could, and given his circumstance where he was coming from, it'd be pretty hard to be disappointed with his performance tonight. I think he's a very different player from Alphonso Davies, so it's very hard to compare the two. When you look at what Alphonso Davies does, just one man to himself. Anytime he's in any open space, he's a threat. Whereas Christian is a little bit different, where he needs to be in an advanced position. He often looks to use sort of movement off other people's spaces. He looks to kind of combine 1-2s, play off a striker, and then kind of do his thing in the box. And he didn't really have a partner for a lot of the match. I think there's been times where Legette does a good job of finding him or looking for him to try and find him in space to get him 1v1 isolated, but he was never able to get in behind. I think part of that was because we've seen how Canna, and we've talked about it, how they've had that low block. That's a strength of his. That wasn't really an option for most of the match. And he looked to, pretty much also the other thing you have to say is anytime Canada got around him, they put him on his butt. They came and early. Left a little bit of a piece in.
Yeah.
And they said whether it was done by committee, it might have been Mark Anthony Kay 3-4 times. It might have been even the strikers, like whoever it was, they were always looking to get a little bit, Richie Larea had the one where he got in on him pretty good. And I think it was
a smiling assassin.
It was the moment where Christian stands him up and kind of gives him the footwork. And Richie took issue with that. And I thought that actually spoke a little bit to some of the personality of Canada, where they really were not backing down to Christian or anybody on the team. I don't think you could really, if you were going to compare the two between Christian and Alphonso, yeah, no doubt, would never argue with the Canadian legend, especially on a night like tonight, where Alphonso Davies was really the difference maker, or really the game breaker at a lot of points in the match. But I think it's tough to criticize Christian amongst this group right now. It's more about finding pieces. What's the piece that's going to fit with him? Is it PFOC? Is it Sargent? I didn't see any connection really between PFOC and Christian. Didn't see that throughout the match. Didn't really see a ton of interplay. Like you mentioned Robinson, I know he got forward and had the really nice assist, but he's going to do that once or twice in a match. You're going to be happy with that. It's not going to be constant interplay or overlap, which is why I think they actually tried to go with Desta on the left side through points in the past, but that's a whole other story. So I think we have a
second live show coming up later this week just to talk about Serginho.
Exactly. Yeah. No, shout out to Patrice.
He's a new version of the Jonathan Bornstein debate, very much so. But that took a really long time as well. You take a look at what the U.S. wasn't able to do, what Canada was able to do. Joel, I think Kalen just mentioned it, but Junior Hoilett, a guy who I'd written off for about a year and said, okay, the new generation's here enough. He was really good again today. And I said in our spaces before that I wouldn't have started him. I would have started Osorio. And I thought Hoilett was necessary for what they needed. He was comfortable to be able to play Larin into gaps, but still occupy enough players that Larin was able to get one-on-one or Davies was able to get isolated.
Yeah, I think his range of passing is a little bit better than Osorio's. So he has a little bit more vertical danger because of that. And so he had a little bit more gravity. U.S. had to pay attention to him, and that kind of opened up some space. And he was very good. Part of it was that the approach really played to his strengths. Like Canada was not out there trying to have any of the ball. They were just trying to be dangerous, absorb pressure and be dangerous on the counterattack. And Junior Hoilett's been playing in the championship for 1,000 years. So he knows how to play exactly that type of game. And it also speaks to the depth of the Canadian pool, where he's not first choice. He hasn't been first choice for a couple of years, but you can rely on him in games like this. Is a big game. You can rely on him in a game like this to be an efficient and effective cog. In the past, you needed him to be the star, and he wasn't up to that. But he can definitely do this role, and he did it tonight, and he did it really effectively. And when you have guys who can fill those gaps at a good level, that allows guys like Alphonso Davies and Kyle Larin to be the stars. And so they were. And on the flip side, I mean, getting back to the Pulisic Davies debate about X factors, I think that the other than a couple of players from Sebastian Legette, the U.S. players who could have sort of eased the burden or taken up, soaked up a little bit more attention from the Canadian defenders in order to give Pulisic more room, they really weren't up to that. And look, that's how points on the road are won or lost in World Cup qualifying.
Speaking of X factors, I know we've gone through their substitutions or lack thereof, and you know, the quote that you brought up about from Berhalter, where he talked about looking down the bench. The one name that I do take issue a little bit amongst that group is Christian Roldan, because I feel like when you look through the course of this summer with the U.S. men's national team from the Nations League or a Gold Cup, he has proven, I think, at this point that he can be an X factor or a difference maker off the bench. And so when you look at the...
I think his first touch in the game was Sargent into the channel.
Yeah.
The first time they hit that pass the entire game.
I think when you look at, if you're going to go back through and look at the available options and who could have actually potentially turned the game. And the thing with Christian too, is, you know, that he's never going to let you down. So if you come into the match, he's not going to, you know, lose his marker. He's not going to not track, or he's not going to work, or whatever it is. The floor is non-existent for him. Whereas he's proven, actually, beyond what many people think, that the ceiling is actually quite high. And I think Berhalter has done a good job and spoken quite a bit about kind of talking to Christian about playing this X factor role off the bench and saying, hey, I'm sorry, but we think you can really do this. And then it felt like that trust was missing when it really mattered tonight. And, you know, maybe he ends up going from the start or getting more playing time in the next match. But that's one where you look back and you say, I could understand maybe if De La Fuente hasn't been around enough, or you don't feel quite confident, or you look down the bench. But I feel like Christian's one of those names that you'd feel confident going into a match and potentially being able to turn this one.
I agree with that, especially because he's so good on set pieces, and the U.S. had a lot. They had a bunch of set pieces in this one. They did not take them well, other than the late one for Miles Robinson. I agree with that. But I want to change the subject. I want to kind of just address it head on. Both you guys, what is wrong with the U.S. right now?
As a country, or as a men's national
team? Yeah, right. Well, as a country, this is a different kind of podcast. No, what is wrong with the U.S. men's national team right now? Give me the 45 second to a minute long elevator pitch. It's a long elevator ride. Give me the elevator pitch on what you think is wrong with the U.S.
I'll give it a stab first.
Okay.
And I'll just say that I think what we're realizing right now is you can't skip steps. There are no skipping steps in building a team, in building a program, in building a federation. And I think the summer was fantastic. We all watched every match. We did this club and country every time. And we saw the U.S. team grow every match. We saw them sometimes not do well, but win. We found them, you know, suffer as a team. We saw them get experience. But we're finding when you get to World Cup qualifiers that it's a little bit of a different thing, and that Nations League final definitely counted and was against, you know, Mexico, and it was fantastic and all that. But it's not, doesn't quite replicate what it means to go to El Salvador. And it doesn't quite replicate what it means to have to win this game at home and have 15, 20 minutes left and understand how to sort of navigate that. And for a young team, I think they're still learning those steps. I still back this team. I still believe that they will find a way through and they'll figure it out. And I'll back the manager as well too. He won't probably care much about it, but I do believe that they will find the answers and this team will grow because of what I saw this summer, that they were able to learn very quickly. I think the learning curve was quite short for this team and they were able to find results. But I think what we're seeing tonight is just these small margins, whether it's Weston off the field, whether it's an injury, whether it's these tiny moments where you're playing level instead of dropping back, or, you know, I thought Aaronson really grew tonight in a way where you get on the good side of things too. So I still think, you know, that you're seeing it on the good side where Aaronson's like, that's World Cup qualifier. You can trust Brendan Aaronson. He can play a big role to get this team to the World Cup. And then you saw on the other side, oh man, you still have some hard lessons to learn. And I just feel like, no matter what happened this summer, it was a little bit of a camouflage for the sense that there were still some tough lessons ahead, and I think this team is learning them right now.
So David? I echo a lot of what Kalen said, and I would word it as, or zero in a little bit more on not just skipping steps. I think with the way the cycle has gone and the way the world has been, this is not a cohesive unit yet. And to my point from before, there are pieces that don't totally fit together at their best. Tyler Adams is a world-class pressing player, and I don't know that maybe Josh Sargent or Weston McKennie or Conrad De La Fuente play the same way. And so it's always going to take a while to get all of that to fit together at its best under a coach with a vision of this is how we play and this is how all these pieces fit together. And so I think you're seeing players that don't press as a group. You're seeing a slow process of play because the next pass isn't already anticipated or the run isn't already made. So I think that's a factor.
I'm going to stop you right there. Isn't this then on Greg Berhalter instead of saying, I'm going to force these players to play this way, I am going to instead assess the skill set of the player pool at my disposal
and craft
a game plan that gets the most out of them?
Because I don't 100% think that, let's say, high pressing fits everyone in this pool.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't fit John Anthony Brooks,
right? Sure.
It doesn't fit Serginho Dest. So that's not my problem. My problem is, you had no core that other players came into. To Kalen's point, you're building everything from the bottom up, and you're figuring out every player's skill set and how it all fits together, and not all these players are the same. So it's not just Greg Berhalter's philosophy to me, because whatever style you choose, you're still going to have to shoehorn pieces in because they start for Barcelona or Juventus or RB Leipzig, and they're just too good to leave off the field. That's always going to happen with this team, and I think that's going to take time. And so I think that's unavoidable. And I think you look at this, look at Canada. How many players were missing off their roster for this game at their top? One, maybe two?
Tejan off the bench, but even still, he's available and was able to come in and make
it. Yeah, and the difference between Larea and Tejan is not... It's not huge. It's not there. I would still take Larea, but anyway.
And it's monumental what the U.S. has done in terms of depth that they've built. They were missing six or seven pieces coming into this camp, taking away that Stefan's unavailable and Pulisic was unavailable and Weston now is unavailable and Dest is hurt and Gio is hurt. Like, there, if you look at my depth chart that I have, there is a number of players that would have been on the field today that were injured, and then the guy that would have filled in for them was also injured. So I don't, to Kalen's point, I'm not jumping off the boat yet. While I don't think this has been the right way that this has gone about, the goal is to qualify. I don't care if it's in first, second, third, or in an intercontinental playoff, and I still think this is a team that will do it. I couldn't even get that last word out. How do you feel about those?
I will say I think this team is already depleted and put a lot into this, and they have a tall task now going against Honduras away.
Yeah.
Cause we all know how hard that is. I mean, I can imagine how hard that is. Excuse me, how hard that is to go down there. I've just played against the Honduran teams in CCL, and I can tell you that that atmosphere is not a fun one. So I just think when you look at what's ahead and who's available and how much mileage has been put on the legs, and I think what we learned tonight, which is maybe that the manager doesn't feel super confident with the amount of depth or the quality of the depth. I think that's a worrying sign for a team that is already has its back up against the wall, going away in the last leg of the last game of this window right now. So that makes me nervous right now.
I think I would not be at all surprised if we saw a 5-4-1. Yeah, I mean, the way Berhalter has played it before, it's more of a 3-4-2-1. But I would not be surprised if the U.S. came out in this game with a five-man back line and a little bit lower line of confrontation and dared Honduras to carry a little bit of the game and then tried to hit on the break. And I know we haven't seen that a lot from the U.S. under Berhalter, but he did it against Mexico. And he's done it in big games in the past in MLS for the Crew. Like he countered Tata's Atlanta United to death he countered them to a scoreless draw in 2017 and he beat Jesse Marsh's Red Bulls by, you know, playing kind of a deep block and countering in 2015 in the playoffs. So he's done it before. It might make sense with this group, given the attrition rate and what must be some heavy legs for key players.
So would it be Brooks, Sands, and Zimmerman as your three?
I mean, I guess it's almost impossible to take Miles Robinson out at this point, but he's logged so many minutes since mid-July. So many minutes.
I don't think Robinson can come out of the team. I also think it's dangerous to send that message of to sit back. I think that's not really, doesn't really suit the personality of this team, doesn't sort of suit the personality of this group. I think they'll be disappointed with their performance tonight. I think they'll take a more aggressive slant in Honduras. I think they'll try to put them under. It just seems like everything that they, you know, from all of the communication you hear coming out of it from the players, even Christian talking about trying to be on the front foot after the match, it just feel like that suits the personality more of this team. I think it would be a big risk to go on the road. Even if you have heavy legs, I understand sort of the logic behind that. You know, three in the back really is just the only reason I would consider that situation is if you really want to play Sergiño Dest. And I just think we've learned enough now. And I know this is trying not to turn into a Sergiño Dest podcast, but
it can be. That's literally half the YouTube comments right now.
Well, I mean, like every podcast I hear right now is, you know, focusing on him too, because it's such a complicated, you know, he's such a frustrating, talented enigma for us right now. And I feel like we've almost learned at this point now that I think there's enough data out to say he almost can't play in a four in the back. We tried him on the left. It doesn't work. We tried him on the right. It doesn't really work. Whereas the three center back system might protect him a little bit more. And if he is healthy, if he is available, and, you know, if you do feel like he's going to give you enough, then do you put him back in and play three in the back to protect him? And that might be the only reason, but I think it's more, you would almost play three in the back more as an attacking formation than one because you're concerned about Honduras or you want to get behind the ball or play in a lower block or anything or mid block or anything like that. So I think they need to come out and be aggressive, try and get under Honduras and get off to a good start. I don't think this team has always left it late. It's been a problem with the U.S. team for even throughout the summer. And so getting goals early or creating opportunities early, though you still think about that missed chance for Miles Robinson in El Salvador, even if it's a set piece, just trying to put pressure, get fouls, get around. Even the fouls that Canada gave up tonight, they were smart to do it not within striking range. I don't know how many times Stu Holden on the broadcast said, it's a little too far to shoot. It's a little far.
And every time, somebody on the U.S. came
it
up.
Was.
And
it was, yeah. But credit to Canada because they were smart to not give up fouls right in and around the box. They were physical, but their line of confrontation was just, they were in a low block, but their line of confrontation was a little bit higher to not concede dangerous opportunities right around
the box. They were really well drilled. Really well drilled on that.
So, okay, so Kaylin, you're not going five. There's questions people have, and I think it's always going to start at the front and come back. Do you think Josh Sargent starts down in Honduras? Kaylin wants the full USSF head coaching salary if he's going to answer that question.
I think you might, honestly, just out of fresher legs. I just think it neither striker has been convincing or won the number nine position, although we've been every match. I feel like the pregame show is like, who's going to win the number nine position?
Nobody.
Ricardo Pepe is still sitting there uncapped. But right. I mean, I just feel like I think it would be Sargent, and the logic behind it would be that he has the fresher of the two legs. PFOC did a good job tonight, I thought, relatively speaking, at least battling with Donnell Henry, just, you know, being a presence or, you know, a nuisance. But that's kind of the same thing we've seen from Sargent. So we haven't really seen one of them come in and change a game or really impose their will or finish a chance. And so I think you go, if you're going for, hey, at least we know what one of these guys are. We're getting the same thing out of each of them, which is to pressure, be a nuisance, or occupy space. You go for Sargent just because he might have the fresher legs.
There is a cowboy hat shaped wild card you could play.
Yeah,
it has not been played yet.
That would be a hell of a thing to throw the kid into his first. But of course, that's what Berhalter did with Conrad, you know, or his Conrad's second cap. was on the road at El Salvador.
I think it would have made better sense tonight off the bench.
Yeah.
Maybe instead of Sargent, just where you're at home. It's, you know, a quote unquote must win. You're searching for 3 points. Throw caution to the wind. You put in the uncapped, you know, teenager.
So Kalen's approach to the road game in Honduras is YOLO. That's what you want to do.
I'm not saying throw him in from the start or anything, but I am intrigued, and I have seen enough of the other two that I feel that Pepe deserves a chance. It might take the form of a substitute appearance, but I don't understand what the risk is at this point of putting him in. He's in good form. He's scoring goals for his club. He's playing week in, week out. He's one of the hottest strikers in the domestic league, and he's just kind of got that personality. I don't think he would be overawed by it. I don't think you have to protect him or it would sort of expose him in ways. I think he would be, I would love to see him come off the bench. I thought tonight would have been a good venue for him. We didn't see that, unfortunately, but I think this next match, you know, if it is a situation where, you know, you're still level and you're looking for one, I think you kind of have to roll that dice and say, who can give us something different? Who can give us some energy? Who's hungry for this opportunity? And every time you've seen Pepe do that, he seems to step up to that type of challenge and be ready for it.
So we talked about rotation a lot. Honduras basically rotated all 10 field players from Canada to this El Salvador game where they got the 0-0 draw on the road against El Salvador. So they have handled this cycle well. One, they've gotten points on the road in their opening two games. And two, it feels like they're going to be able to choose the 11 that they want. You'd imagine Andy Nahar comes back into the team after the way he played against Canada. Kyoto gets the start in this one. Lozano as well. Debbie Flores probably comes back in for the game against the U.S. Brian Acosta got the start here tonight. So this is going to be a tough matchup for the U.S. This is going to be a tough job. Anything preview-wise that fans should know or that you are focusing on over the next 3 days going into this? And reminder, we will be on Twitter Spaces pregame on Wednesday before this one. It'll be during the Canada game, I believe. So we'll come on as the USMNT roster comes out. We can talk about Canada as it's going on as well, as we did on Thursday, and just talk about soccer in general. Maybe we'll talk about, I don't know, players walking off fields in Brazil and everything else going on around the world. Dora, what are you thinking about for the USMNT over these next few days?
I mean, rest and recovery. It a lot of it does come down to how fit will Pulisic, Adams, Miles Robinson, and John Brooks be. Those guys right now feel irreplaceable to me. And I'm hoping that Weston McKennie can do something to earn his way into Berhalter and the team's good graces. But Berhalter post-game quote said it was a team policy, and I'm not going to get into specifics on it about what Weston did. And then when asked whether McKennie would be available in Honduras, he said it remains to be seen. Boy, I'm hoping that Weston McKennie has a come to Jesus moment and is able to make things right and be a little bit professional, because it's worth remembering he was suspended by Juventus 5 months ago for hosting a party in the middle of lockdown during COVID. So it's not a great look from the young man. I mean, most of me really, really hopes he's out on the field and is able, because I think he would help the U.S. win. So that's what I'm thinking of from a U.S. point of view. From Honduras, they have been on the road twice and they've come out with 2 points, and that is fantastic for them. They, as you said, they'll have a heavily rotated schedule. I still think they're going to be Honduras. That means very hard, very physical, very much about trying to hit you in the open field. And no matter how the U.S. has played against Honduras over the past 35, 40 years that I've been watching this, Honduras always finds a way to get 3 or 4 good counterattacking opportunities a game. They do it to Mexico too. They do it to everybody they play against. How the U.S. is prepared for and handles that is probably going to determine who comes out of there with points, or if both teams come out of there with a point. That's where I'm at.
The U.S. are desperate to get Weston McKennie back, if at all possible. And I don't know. Doesn't sound like we're going to get much more information about it. But when the team sheet comes out, and it's not just because right now you do need every available body, but I think Weston also occupies a space within this team that is not just about. I mean, it's his sort of persona, his personality on the team, and I think in a game where you have your back against the wall, which the U.S. team does right now, that he's the type of player that you need to call on, that you really want to be there. And that's why, and same for tonight. That's why it was disappointing not to have him. Cause you would have bet on him to find a moment, whether it was on a set piece or through the run of play or on a tackle or whatever it might be that might change the game. And so if they can get him back, that will be big. I think the back line will probably stay pretty similar. John Anthony Brooks was rested the first match. You'll expect him to continue to stay on. I think the partnership with Miles Robinson, if he can go, he's almost too good to take out at this point. And then you have to question with Honduras and their threat on the wings. You really have to have a hard, honest conversation with both wingbacks to say, DeAndre Yedlin or Anthony Robinson, how are you feeling? Can you go? Because I think you'd like to stay with them if you possibly can. And then you kind of build forward. But it's tough right now, and recovery will be the name of the game because there's not a lot of time and there's a lot on the line for this U.S. team to kind of get things back moving, get back on track, get a point at least. And you really try to push this game, I think, to try to take three.
Yedlin has to be questionable because remember, he came out, he asked for that sub in El Salvador and then forced into action early here. 5 points now at this point from the U.S. I think everyone's happy coming out of this window if that is the final result. 3 points, a bit more questionable.
It's the most available.
Yeah.
If you think everybody's happy with 5 points, you have not
right,
checked.
I meant everyone who is here right yeah. now.
I think if you were to change it and you were to say there was one, you drew both road matches and won at home, then people would say, right. Okay, 5 points, you take that. I think the way this has happened,
they still wouldn't say.
Okay,
that,
never mind.
That you don't spend enough time on Twitter, and that's okay. Good for you.
Yeah.
So let's finish up here, though. We celebrated Canada for the opening 15-20 minutes of this show. A big result, a big performance from them. They play a little bit earlier on Wednesday night. They play El Salvador. So now El Salvador, they opened with two home games. They play almost the exact same team tonight that they did against the U.S. So Alex Roldan, Monterosa, Darwin Seren, Zavaleta, all guys that we've talked about. They were all in the starting lineup again. Joaquin Rivas as well, big-time goal scorer in USL. He got the start for the second straight game. El Salvador, you know, they went for it in the two home games. They got 2 points, which wasn't what they wanted. And now, as we've said, Canada has rotated to some extent. This sets up fairly well, it feels like, for Canada to get this win at home, and it is a must-win game, right?
Yeah. No, it absolutely is, because El Salvador are our bottom three team in the Ocho, I think. They just empty the tanks for 180 minutes. They're playing their first road game in this round of World Cup qualifying since 2009. There's a massive talent differential on these two teams, and it's a home game, and Canada have already dropped home points. There is a danger that this can be a trap game. There is a danger for Canada that they could be like, we just battled back against Honduras and we just, you know, went toe-to-toe with the U.S. and the U.S. We're going to smoke these guys. I hope they don't feel like that. I really hope they don't feel like that, because that's rarely how World Cup qualifying works. And even though if I were a betting man, I would put my money on a multi-goal Canadian win, because I don't think they'll take it for granted. There is a danger here that they take it for granted. But just in terms of how it should play out, I would expect a return to more of a 3-5-2 with David and Laren up top. Maybe Alfonso Davies at left wing back, though. Maybe, you know, given he had to come off with a little knock, maybe he doesn't even start. Yeah. And you roll with that for 60 minutes and see where you are, and then kind of reassess. If they need to go for it, they can go for it. If they don't, then they don't have to. But this is, I mean, this is a big, big game for Canada on Wednesday, because if they don't take full points here, then they're actually in a little bit of trouble.
I wouldn't be shocked if we see Maxime Crépeau in goal for this one. And I don't think that's a step down. You'd assume the two center backs from the last game returned to the starting lineup. Kamal Miller came off the bench for this one. My guess is Tajon Buchanan at right wing back to give Richie a little bit of a rest. And then probably Adekube at left wing back. And then Jonathan David and Atiba Hutchinson can return to the starting lineup, which is huge. And you'd assume Osorio maybe as well to rotate things, which hopefully for Herdman, the protection against the taking it easy is all these guys need to earn minutes. A Tajon, a Crépeau, a Osorio, they have a chance now to fight for more minutes in their team. So you hope that that's enough to at least push them in that one. So that Canada game coming up on Wednesday, as I said, we'll be here for pregame. And then, of course, Extra Time, Club and Country driven by Continental postgame. Whenever that does happen, whenever it is, I'll be sweating as usual. We'll be hanging out. We'll be talking soccer. It's always fun. It's always good. Now, if you are listening to the podcast, I'm about to hand it over to myself. And we're going to talk about the Major League Soccer weekend that was. Best 22 under 22 players that we saw. The Daryl DK train is back on the rails, which is exciting. And all the big performances in the playoff races coming on. If you are watching live right now, that sounds really good. So you should go download that podcast tomorrow when it comes out. And on that note, I'm going to hand it over to a handsome young man named David Goss. Oh, David. Thank you so much for tossing to me. I'm David Goss, and now we're going to talk about MLS here on Extra Time Radio with Matt Doyle and Kalen Carr, as we've been for the last hour. Soccer, am I right? What a game. Oh, what a moment.
What a game.
What a game. USA, Canada.
Very smooth transition.
Mexico, seamless. Costa Rica, Jamaica, Panama, all of those are countries in the world.
I mean, this right here might look like a reflection of the Panama-Jamaica game happening right now, but
Doyle.
Who can tell?
30 seconds ago, Anders told us this was audio only.
Oh, that's right.
And then you wanted to describe the reflection in the back of your picture. Oh, man. And this isn't even the late night punchy part of the show. This is when we're supposed to be locked in. All right, let's talk MLS. It was a big weekend of action, even with all the international going on and all that focus. Shout out to the winners of our Extra Time Fantasy League. For the first time this year, we have a tie. And this is why Americans won't like soccer. No one likes a tie. You've got Soccer Ball Team and Gold Elevator FC. They both put up 108 points because they both captained the god, Hani Mukhtar, in this one. So that is the winning formula. Speaking of Hani Mukhtar, let's start our weekend review with Nashville SC. 3-1 win over NYCFC. Anders wants to start with this. Just when we gave NYCFC props on the show, they go and do this. Do you take anything from this game, even though they were missing basically five defenders outside of their starting right back? I leave that to you.
Wait, they lost Sands. They didn't have Chanel. Was Collins gone as well?
Yes.
That's a lot. They did have Sean Johnson. Not that that helped. I still take something from it. It's a better indication, I think, for where these teams are right now in the regular season than maybe what we'll see in the postseason. But we've been asking Nashville all year long to prove their bona fides in terms of building on last year. And I think that they've played better soccer, right? And then they've been in the top three or four in the East all season long. But I personally was always saying, like, look, it's a home-heavy schedule. We haven't seen them go away from home and get it done yet. And honestly, they played a lot of the lesser teams in the league in the first half of the season. And, like, they are into the toughest part of their schedule. And they opened that with the 2-0 win over Atlanta last week at Atlanta. And then they followed it up by just ripping apart this very, very good NYCFC team. And I mean, you're right. NYCFC were missing more pieces than Nashville, but that is the way the game is. It's not like Nashville is without, like they were without Walker Zimmerman. They were without Anibal Godoy, Rondell Leal. They had some significant pieces out as well, and they navigated it really, really well. I am just about at the point now where they've answered basically every question, including in this one, right? Like Hani Mukhtar, he was playing more as a midfielder in this
one. Yeah.
Like he wasn't playing as that sort of shadow striker where he was very, very good all summer long. He was actually running the game a little bit. And that sort of ease in terms of moving pieces around, compensating without Leal, compensating without Godoy, I didn't necessarily expect that. I didn't necessarily expect to see that from Nashville. So it showed me a lot. They're second place in the Eastern Conference, and it's not. Or are they third now? Yeah, they're third.
They're third still behind Orlando.
Behind Orlando, but it's not a mistake.
I still would have liked to see both these teams go toe to toe with their first teams. I do think for NYCFC especially, I think they had to dig very deep into the depth pool. I believe it was Morales and Latinovic were playing as center backs, and you go against CJ Sapong and Hani Mukhtar the way they're in form right now, and it was not pretty. But I actually think, If you have to go off this game as well, and it was physical, there was, you know, double red card incident before halftime, so it had a little bit of everything, that a little bit of that playoff feel. And I think it's the first time these two clubs have ever met, which is wild. You know, Nashville's a new team, obviously, and then COVID and all that. But Mukhtar right now is a problem. He is really, you know, he gets in these little spaces where if they are able to win pressure and win that first ball, if that first ball gets to him and he turns on you, it is really a problem for other teams. And then when you combine him with Sapong as well, the two of them have really combined well. And I actually think this team is the biggest threat towards stopping New England going to MLS Cup. I think they can do it on set pieces. They're strong in the back. They have good width play, good wide play. I think that also times well or matches up well with New England. And then I think you could put up Hani Mukhtar and CJ Sapong right up there with Gustavo Bo and Buxa. I think that as far as their production, and I actually think they combine a little bit better. The two of them fit as more complementary pieces than we've seen at times Buxa or Bo, or how does that always fit together? And they're getting production from both. But I really think this Nashville team is real. And you can say both teams are missing significant players. That's why I'd like to see them really go at it full strength. But they're in form right now, and it came at a big time for them because they're about to hit the next four matches on the road. They've held serve unbeaten at home. They look like a good bet to get home field through the playoffs, then maybe have to go win one tough one. And look, you know, there's still other teams, Orlando, NYCFC. I'm not giving up on a lot of these sides as well, too. But I do want to give Nashville props for the form they're in.
Do you consider them to be MLS Cup threats?
I do. I think they could get to MLS Cup. I don't know if they would be favorites to get through MLS Cup in the East, but I really feel like it's not. You could say, okay, it was the home form, but to me, as long as you're good at home, the road form, you only need to win one potentially, or maybe two max in the playoffs to get it done in MLS to go to MLS Cup. So I'm not too concerned about that. And I also think that the way that they play should actually give them better results on the road than they've had. And I expect to see a couple more big ones throughout this next run of games. But being good at home, that's the formula in the playoffs. So I think they're rounding into form at the right time.
And I think for me, some of the things, I don't take that much from NYCFC, but for Nashville, this was a fully loaded NYCFC attack. They held them to one goal. It was a little shaky the first 10 or so minutes, but without Walker Zimmerman, without Dave Romney, I think as well in this one, and then without Godoy, they were able to hold, I think, a Anunguna's play, because Godoy and Dax, while they're phenomenal, how many games can you get out of them if the playoffs, the schedule gets tight? Now you do have a third option in there. And then obviously you guys are talking about Mukhtar. I think this is the best we've seen him. There was moments where he was just gliding by guys in mid. And that's where it looked interesting in midfield. More space to run. He was picking up second balls from deeper positions. And he looked super comfortable. It was a fun game. You said it, Kalen. It had like a pure playoff feel and atmosphere between these two sides. Hence the fight. I thought Tati Castellanos was in a little bit of danger almost going off before that. I think there were 7 shoulder-to-shoulder challenges that neither coaching staff thought was a legal challenge going into it.
Can we just dive into that real quick? Fun. Maxi versus Dax is a matchup. Like, if
it
you
was
were to
a
do,
weird
like,
fight. Like, come on, guys.
If you were to do, like, what's the old video game? Or it was like the
Tekken?
Claymation characters on MTV. Like, if you were to do a version of that for MLS, those two would be, like, first on the list to go at it.
But it is the only... it is the only fair fight they probably could either of them could pick out on the on the other roster. Come on, little guy.
Nah, that's disrespect. Yeah, I don't know. Both guys are tough. I like that they didn't back down. Both teams.
Dak's got the
he got it off from every
the
angle.
Chip thing off quickly too. Walking off the field, flexing the muscles for the entire crowd to enjoy. As Dax and Maxie just get that Nashville turf started a little for the USA Canada game. Also, shout out to Alistair Johnson, another big miss for this Nashville team. So a big win for them. You guys mentioned Orlando in this as well. So our 22-under-22 player of the weekend presented by Body Armor. Who else? The train back on the tracks. Darryl DK hype train. He's living large. Rockets the first goal in on a counterattack sort of by himself that Abubakar Keita complained to every referee in the vicinity to try and claim a foul, which he did not get that call. And then this Orlando team able to hold on to a 3-2 win against Columbus. We've talked about Columbus's problems. We've talked about their issues. We haven't talked about Orlando a ton recently. They've kind of sat in the middle as the Revs have sort of stretched out what the best of the East looks like. It feels like Orlando hasn't risen with that push. Were you impressed by this now that Darryl DK is back in the team?
I mean, yes and no, right? Because DK gives them an attacking option that they can't replicate when he's not around. And he looked healthy in this one. He just trucked poor Abubakar Keita. And then he had, you know, it was just such a Darryl DK finish where he just hit the ball so damn hard that it was past the keeper before he even knew what was happening. And then they go up 2-0. And you think it's over because this Orlando team has been so good defensively all year. And then the part that I wasn't all that impressed about was it was very uncharacteristic to see them open the door and let Columbus back into this game. Columbus made it 2-2. Columbus played some good soccer in the second half, maybe the best soccer that they've played.
First half as well, they created chances.
That's fair. They do look a little bit better than they did a month ago, certainly. But this was kind of a very uncharacteristic Orlando City performance. That said, I'm still, you know, basically all in on this team because they're getting healthy. And, you know, Oscar Pereja has done such a good job of rotating this team and keeping guys fresh, other than maybe the central defensive pairing. And when they do have that first 11 out there, there's four teams in the East that I think we all agree are probably cut above the rest, and that's the Revs, Orlando City, Nashville, and NYCFC. And like, even though the Revs have been incredible this year and are probably running away with the Shield, I'm not sure I see a huge difference between those two teams if they're both 100% fit and good to go come the playoffs.
And credit to Orlando, Adam Grinwis, third-string goalkeeper, starts this game. And not only is it your third-string keeper, I think he hadn't started an MLS game in 3 years, but Gaese is one of the best keepers in this league. He is one of the game-changers at that position, so that's a big loss for them as well.
There are a lot of backup keepers in MLS right now who are not covering themselves in glory. And we'll be talking about FC Dallas in a second here.
Well, you mentioned Sean Johnson as well on the Hany Mukhtar first goal. So a big result for Orlando. Kalen, you kind of gave your little rundown of the Eastern Conference. You mentioned Orlando in there.
Can I hop in on DK real quick?
No, we don't talk about Darryl DK on this show. We don't want
to. The only thing I'll say, yes, he takes them to another level. And I think him as a number nine, and it was, you know, that first play actually is created from an actual really good tackle from Nani to play the ball forward. But there's still, if I'm being really critical of DK, he doesn't quite recognize necessarily how to use his body well still, because he doesn't actually back into Keita like where he sort of prepares himself that way. And then what happens is Keita kind of overcommits and DK is just strong enough to ride out the challenge and come out on the other side of it. But what we saw with the national team was at times where he's either not backing in and using that posture to be able to kind of create some leverage there, or learning how to spin a guy or turn. And then even on the play where he's running in behind, he seemed a little bit indecisive and how do you pronounce his name?
Wormgor.
Yeah. Right? He just continues to backpedal and look, yeah, I'm sure DK cuts a sort of a commanding figure when he's going, but he just kept going back and back. But as much as I'm critical of DK between maybe these little things in his game, you also see at the same time, it's an incredible goal. And that's where the natural talent or the ability is that he's able to ride the challenge. He's able to improvise and continue. And then when he has the finishing ability and then the confidence, you know, when he has confidence, he's a different looking player. And the little layoff there to Junior Urso, Zellerion does his team no favors in that case, just trying to play out of a situation that he shouldn't be. And they had fought to get back into the match and probably should have taken a point. But it's just a really nice little layoff there to Urso that helps him kind of carry finish to the back post. So I think that confidence and then just working on those little details will be important for him as he develops. But a part of it is just going back to Orlando. We talked about this after the national team, putting it behind him, getting back to Orlando, getting back in that environment, making a playoff push, getting these minutes and experience, working on his game and getting goals and confidence back. So it was good to see him back out there, even if I'm nitpicking a little bit.
A guy who looks like he's going to go the opposite, hopefully, by the way, is Chris Mueller. Just does not look like the same player that he was his first 2 years in this league. We know the move's coming to Scotland. Just you hope that mentally for him, that's what he needed, was to just know the next move and move on. But he has not been able to take advantage as other pieces have been out. Not our 22 under 22 player, but we're still going to mention Jesus Ferreira. Unbelievable goal in RSL, a goal and an assist in a 3-2 loss for Dallas out in Salt Lake City. Brian Rodriguez-esque on the goal that he did score, which is now that's the new term. Next week, I'll say someone was Jesus Ferreira-esque. But this was what I just said with Mueller, what you said with DK, right? He had his upswing as a young player. Then he had his drop over the course of the last year, and now he's back into form, Doyle, and he's back being effective. And you got to think, in a week in which maybe, and I don't know what just happened an hour and a half ago, no center forward has taken their spot, that he has to be in Greg Berhalter's mind.
He's not playing as a center forward. He's not playing as a center forward. He's playing as a second striker. Or
so he has to be in a national team
midfielder
combo.
In terms of in the 4-2-3-1. He's having a very nice year, and he had a very, very nice game this weekend in a loss. But I'm sure there's an argument to get him into another national team camp at some point, but I would argue he's not playing so well that you got to break down the door and put him in. That said, this is another, it's another year in which a lot of Dallas's kids have played really, really well, and they have been, homegrown kids have played really, really well, and they've just been let down by their imports. Now, Frank O'Hara did have a goal in this one and off the feed from Jesus Ferreira, but in this instance in particular, it was their goalkeeper, Felipe. He just struggled catching the ball. And I think you could argue that the second and third RSL goals, I don't want to say all came down to him, but were largely on him. And this has been Dallas's story all year long, where if Jimmy Maurer is not out there, they are just a sieve in between the pipes. And I think the season's not over for Dallas. They still have a small chance to climb above the playoff line and make it to the postseason, but it's fading. This was, if they had gotten a point here, great. A win, even better. And I would argue that at times they played well enough that it looked like they were going to win, but they're down to 11th place in the Western Conference now. Portland, Salt Lake, Vancouver, LAFC, San Jose are all in front of them. All of those teams have a game in hand. It just doesn't seem like there's a clear path for Dallas to get back into the playoffs. And for RSL, this was absolutely a must win. Like, if RSL is going to make it back to the playoffs, they needed to hold serve here. And I mean, they did, which is very good. They came back from a deficit, which is very good. But they actually played some attractive attacking soccer in this one, which they haven't been doing a lot all year long. And their new signing kind of went under the radar. The Jonathan Menendez, the Argentinian winger who they got from, I want to say, Independiente this summer, he's been very, very good. And he gives them a little bit something in terms of maybe unlocking it's less unlocking set defenses, and it's more about being very decisive when a defense is actually scrambled and out of position. He doesn't let that moment go to waste. He'll go right at a back line, put them on their heels, and take the cracks that are forming and make them bigger and help his teammates out. And RSL, we're really missing that. I think he's been very, very good in that role. RSL, certainly this week, were a lot more fun to watch than they were last week. But it's also like they held serve at home barely, and they need to go on the road now and show that they can actually be a playoff team, because it's an absolute – it's dogfight at the Western Conference right down at the playoff line.
Let's hit two more games in the West in that dogfight before we get to our celebrating soccer moment of the weekend presented by Continental Tire. And the first one is LAFC Sporting KC, dominant win for LAFC, the 4-0 win. They were playing basically me at center back over the course of this game, but it looked pretty good. Arango gets his first goal.
David, you're a very good center back.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think I could play for Bob. I think Bob would like me. I think we'd appreciate each other. That's as confident as I've ever been.
Bob likes center backs who can trap and pass a soccer ball. So I'm not sure that you're his cut of tea.
I would give my body for the team, though.
There you go.
I would do anything for the Las Vegas Lights if you signed me up. 4-0 win. So that's the big moment. We have not really discussed on this show, because of the awkward timing of it, that Diego Rossi isn't on the team anymore. Last year's Golden Boot winner obviously scored the first goal in the franchise's history, has been one of the faces of the franchise so far. I watched him play a week ago in El Trafico, and then all of a sudden he's off to Turkey, and I think a pretty big move for this club. Kalen, what do you make of altogether how this came together, that it's, you know, late in the window, they're not going to replace him. While it is a loan, it sounds like the purpose of this is that he will be going there full time, and how LAFC's handled this.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a strange rule, right, where Turkey, the window stays open a little bit later than, yeah, than elsewhere.
It was about a week later.
Okay, so yeah, it's late in the window, and you're like, okay, well, clearly there was a... I imagine there's other offers. I haven't read up or heard a lot about it, but I think ultimately it's a good move for both sides, because for Rossi, he gets to go to a club that I think is in Europa League right now, but is generally within Champions League football and playing Champions League football. So that would be a big opportunity for him. Obviously, it's going to be a big, probably pay increase as well, playing over there. And then you get a chance there where if you do well in some Champions League matches, which I think he clearly has the ability, we've seen in you know, definitely, especially last year, he just seemed to really kind of break out and even come even more into form. And sadly, it was in a very strange COVID season within the bubble and back and forth, where I think that really damaged a lot of LAFC's plans as far as what they were planning to do. We saw them start the season so bright last year and planning to continue to, you know, their record-setting form and hopefully win MLS Cup and sell some players on. And, you know, that all fell apart. So I think it's been, I think it's a good move probably for both clubs, for the club and the player, although it does cap LAFC's ceiling. And now, you know, they have Arango in, but they're going to, I think it really caps what they can do this year. And, but it was a move that I felt like they had to make. They were kind of almost backed into a corner.
Because, like, let's assume that, you know, Vela comes back healthy and Brian Rodriguez, who's starting right now for Uruguay and who scored one of the goals of the season last week, come back and play like DPs. And Arango, who I thought was pretty good in this game, he hasn't looked great, but I thought he was pretty good. Let's say those three guys play to the level that we think they're capable of.
Those are a lot of ifs. And
it applies to Diego Rossi too. Like Diego Rossi has been fantastic off the ball this year. He hasn't been able to finish a sentence.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying that they're better off without him, but he's been leaving points on the table for them.
So
while I understand losing talent is tough, and I'm sure LAFC would have rather had this get done earlier in the window so that they could have added a piece, I'm not sure that their ceiling is substantially lower right now, even without a Champions League talent, Diego Rossi.
I agree with you because of the injury to Eddie Segura. If they had Segura and Vela was out, I think that with Rossi, they could have been good enough to still contend. Without Segura and without Vela, I don't think this team can win MLS Cup. Hence, I think their ceiling still relies on the health of Carlos Vela for the rest of the season. So I agree with Doyle in a way. It felt like culturally, like he had to go. It was time for them to sell a player like this. It was time for them to complete this. And unfortunately, and a lot of it because of COVID, they didn't win the trophies they thought they would through this process. But at some point, you couldn't keep trying to push it 6 months down the road. And so that's where, when we were out in LA, I was shocked to hear how openly people around LAFC were saying, we'd be surprised if he was still here, for a club that hasn't really talked like that in the past. And so I think there's an acknowledgement of that it's not, hasn't worked perfectly, and that they almost need to start to reset down for whatever comes
next. You're seeing that happening right now. And Marc-Anthony Kay is gone.
Right.
Then they move forward. They move now Rossi on. They tried to move Brian Rodriguez on. That didn't quite work, but you'd expect that to happen at some point, even if you just show that one highlight. Somebody's gonna come in. And so I think like you're starting to see the wheels turning. Carlos Vela is running. His contract is reportedly up at the end of the season. He, barring him coming back with just lights out, coming, you know, really crazy the way Carlos Vela has in the past, but that hasn't happened in a while now. It's been looking, dating back a year and a half at this point. So I think it's very hard to see that happening. I would love to see it. Carlos Vela is my probably a favorite player to watch on a weekend, but it just hasn't quite looked the same. So I think you're starting to see LAFC understanding we need to make some moves. We have to make some moves to give us some flexibility. And then I don't think it will be a full rebuild or reset. Right. That's not the way this club works, but partly because you're making smart moves here and there along the way. And I do think I'll bounce back again and say, I think it caps their ceiling as far as what they can do this year. But I think that they're having to take a little bit of a bigger picture look at where they're at as a club and what their needs are.
I don't want to miss out on the Colorado Rapids here. We got a little bit more time. They defeat the San Jose Earthquakes 1-0 in the 89th minute, I think it was, in the end, a goal for Dom Baggi back in the Burgundy, full powered up. Dom Baggi 101 right there.
Kaylin, I forgot Carr, this is video. People can't see me fist pump. But
yeah, Kaylin Carr's pumped up. Doyle's got like six cats now in the shot as well. So the Rapids are now 7-game unbeaten, 1 loss in the last 12. They ended San Jose's 10-game unbeaten run. The Colorado Rapids have the best points per game in the Western Conference, and the second best in Major League Soccer to New England. So, Kaylin, you gave us your little top of the East rundown. Are the Rapids for real? Are the Colorado Rapids MLS Cup contenders or favorites in your mind?
I mean, I would definitely go towards contenders, but I wasn't even sure that they were contenders for a while. And I got to say, like, I'm changing my tune to the Rapids. And, you know, I think the knock was saying that they have not like necessarily one top goal scorer where you look across the Western Conference often. And well, I mean, Chicharito, I think when he's healthy, you see Rui Diaz, obviously you see a little bit more there, but I think the Rapids have 13, maybe 14 different goal scorers this season, which I think is, you know, probably the top in the Western Conference, maybe near it at least. And so they're kind of doing it by committee. And the Dom Baggi one is almost sort of the icing on the cake in a way, because it's following the exact same recipe that they've found success with throughout the season, which is to find a player that maybe is stuck on the bench somewhere, but has qualities that you think can help the team, comes in the 87th minute, 88th minute, gets the game winner. And some players also, I just know that feeling of being really more comfortable in one position than another, or one place than another. And he's had so much success in Colorado before. So you think he comes off the bench and can kind of hop back in the swing of things in this new looks Colorado team. I think they're a team people aren't going to want to play in the playoffs. So whether you, especially if they're able to get home field, you have to go to Colorado in the cold, in the altitude. That's not a place that I don't think an LA Galaxy or an LAFC, if they get in, will want to go there and play. So credit to Robin Fraser again. I mean, he keeps this team rolling.
Cole Bassett swears by it, refusing to go to Europe.
Another one off the post. I thought he was going to have one.
I know. Michael Barrios, I think, hit the post like three times in a span of 10 minutes in this game. So there are still things to worry about, but it's been exciting to watch the Rapids do their thing. Vancouver, another big win out west as well. They are now the hottest team in the league because San Jose lost. Ryan Gauld, all the energy, all the juice late in the game against Austin FC, who continue to sink down the standings. We have a thing in here about Miami and FC Cincinnati, but for FC Cincinnati fans, I promise I won't mention it anymore. Let's close out on our celebrating soccer moment of the weekend presented by Continental Tyler. Let's close out on our celebrating soccer moment of the weekend presented by Continental Tire. That should be one thing I'm able to pronounce considering how many times we get to do it. And it was, of course, Henry Kessler closing out the W in Philadelphia, a 1-0 win for the Revs. If you did not see this, Henry Kessler, classic soccer move, boots the ball out of the stadium to waste time while running into the sideline, but has the wherewithal to realize that ball stance exists now in the modern era of the game. So he also slaps that ball away into the crowd.
No, he doesn't
crowd.
Slap he it. Slap he throws it up. He picked it up and he hucked it into, yeah. Into the stands, man. That was just...
This, oh, we read about Kellen Acosta.
To see this. I cannot wait to see this guy in the CONCACAF Champions League.
I was going to say, we read about Kellen Acosta last week and what he has learned and how he has come along in the dark arts. Yeah. Henry Kessler seems to be not too far behind New York City's finest.
I mean, if you're a Red Bull, well, I know Red Bull fans personally who are just beside themselves. This kid spent 5 years in the Red Bull Academy, and the team decided they wanted nothing to. I mean, he's one of the best young defenders in the league. He's already, you know, played for the U.S. national team, and he just has an attitude that is infectious for the fan base and repellent for opponents, and Revs fans are really, really enjoying that.
Can we call this the dark arts, though? Because I feel like the dark arts implies that there's anything dark about, like, nah. That you, there's something hidden or...
behind the scenes,
it's like
throwing a ball away in front of
everyone.
This was
just, like, the most blatant, the ball was already 2 yards out, just boot it up the pit.
The best part is, you know, his entire
it wasn't like the way you described it was like, oh yeah, I knocked the ball over. Like, that would have been a little more like I tripped over it, CONCACAF or dark arts. This was just full on WWE. This was just madness off the top ropes, and I respect it.
My favorite part about this is I guarantee his entire family's at the game because he's I think a New York City native, Northern New Jersey, as Doyle said, Red Bull Academy. So I would love to, because I remember when I would do things like that, and in the moment you don't think about it, and then after when your mom and dad are like, hey, what was the deal with that thing you were yelling about on the field? And you're like, oh, right, I'm an idiot. Yeah, that was embarrassing. So good on Henry Kessler. If anyone said anything negative, just tell them that you won our soccer moment of the week. By Continental Tire, we will send you a pair of Continental tires, just two of them. So you either have to get a two-wheeled vehicle or you got to figure out what to do on the back two on your own. And with that, we have completed our full show. To all of you USA and Canada fans out there, good on you, or keep your chin up, depending on which way it went. And we will be back with our pre-game and post-game shows around the USA Honduras game and the Canada El Salvador game coming up on Wednesday night, I believe. And for all of you celebrating, Shana Tova, and have a good one.